This is Faster, a podcast by Flow Cycling. In each episode, we interview industry experts to educate you, challenge you, and even change the way you train so you become faster. Life balance for most triathletes is a constant challenge. Thrown the last couple of years over COVID and the return to our new lives, and it's been nearly impossible. Today on Faster, we welcome back Max Jones to discuss his journey from owner at Elevate Sports Performance and a competitive triathlete to leaving for many new careers, starting a family, losing a house in a fire, becoming a full-time runner, and back to a triathlete on the Flow Factory team. Learn how he's used his strength and conditioning background to make a comeback, all while finding balance in a very busy, very wonderful life. When we're not creating this podcast, we're working on other ways to make you faster. At Flow, we design and manufacture some of the world's fastest cycling wheels that we sell consumer direct to keep more money in your pockets. As a special thank you for listening to Faster, we wanted to offer you 20% off your next purchase. Simply use coupon code PODCAST in all capital letters at checkout. Your purchase will also support our give back initiatives. 1% of all sales supports our Bike for a Kid program, where we provide bikes and helmets for kids in need. We also plant one tree for every wheel we ship as a thank you to our planet. Enjoy the show. Hey, Max Jones, we're happy to have you back on the podcast. The first episode we did with you was probably, 2 or 3 years ago now. We had an awesome strength training episode with you. So welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, John. Happy to be back. And man, how much our worlds have changed in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is one of the things that I really wanted to get in and talk with you about. I know that you've had, you know, I think years ago, we first met, you were still in school. We had just started Flow, and you guys used to come over, you and Brian, the guy you started a business with, and we had a lot of great conversations. You actually left that business. You started a new career. You kind of exited triathlon for a while. You got started a family life, and you've had a really amazing journey, and now you've kind of made your way back into triathlon. So I think having a conversation just about that, about your transition and how, you know, you've incorporated staying in shape and getting yourself back in shape to where you are today is going to be kind of an interesting conversation for just people to listen to. So why don't we start with you just kind of giving us a quick overview of, you know, where you were before all these changes started for you.
So basically kind of going through the throes of being in your mid-20s, trying to start a business with a couple partners, basically a strength conditioning medical facility, and then decided to throw on a marriage, a kid on the way, and kind of just left myself in a spot where there was really kind of not a whole lot of Max to give to the world, and kind of just had to do a big picture, like, what is my happiness quotient right now? Like, where am I at? Am I doing as much as I can for the things that matter besides bringing in income and things like that? And it was kind of funny. I was just on a run with a friend of ours, a mutual friend, as you know, is Paul Duncan. Yeah. And we were kind of sharing some miles together. And I was like, dude, this is kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm happy. I think I'm doing what the world's socially conditioned me to think and stuff. But like, I'm kind of missing something, man. And he was like, dude, he's like, you've got a couple degrees. You know, you'd be a shoo-in for the guard, the Nevada Army National Guard. And I was like, well, I said no to a kind of a spec ops contract out of high school because I was able to run in college. So it was kind of like a kind of left that on the table. So kind of was like, And I kind of looked at the timing, the numbers, and what that commitment would do for me and the family. And as you were acutely aware, you know, no one pays your insurances with a small business and stuff like that. So with a kid on the way, we saw our health insurance go from like $300 or $400 a month, which is manageable for a mid-20s, to over $1,400 a month, which was a pretty cataclysmic price point when you have a kid on the way. So of course, like, you're going to do anything to make that work, right? Like, you have a new, like, a real no shit why, like, to do, to produce,
yeah,
you know? And so I kind of was looked at the times and looked at kind of how that all worked, and I said yes to it, and essentially I joined the guard in mid 2019, and went to basic training, officer school, and unfortunately, right before that, we had a nice place in Boulder City. It was the first house I ever purchased, and right before that, probably one of the good worst things that ever happened to my family was we lost our house in a house fire, an electrical fire in Boulder City. And it was kind of unbeknownst to us, kind of past all the typical appraisal stuff, just a old wiring. It was a Boulder City, quote unquote, dam house that was built for the workers in the 40s when they were building that whole thing. And fortunately, we lost our house due to that. And that was what was ironic about the whole, or weird about the whole thing, was when I was literally on my way to go to basic training in Fort Benning, Georgia. And for any of the military members out there, like, you're excommunicado from your family for a while. Like, there's no, like, you know, right, you know, there's no texting, FaceTiming for a little bit. So I essentially signed three leases to houses, not knowing which one we were going to get accepted for January 2019. Basically, I come fast forward 7 months, made it through officer school, did pretty good.
So when you were there, like, what, how did your triathlon training transfer over to, like, basic training? Were you, like, a standout? Did you struggle in any areas? How did that work?
Yeah. So, you know, it turns out multi-sport is a pretty good help for, you know, the Army basic training school. I mean, you know, here's the thing, like, I'd been training for, you know, 9 to 10 years, including my running career in college for quite a while. So obviously the lower end standards weren't really a concern for me to get through. And also being involved in the strength world, you know, the Army has undergone a lot of growth with looking at more of a holistic strength conditioning kind of testing metric. But yeah, I mean, I got beat by one guy in the 2 mile, and he turned out to run, he's running for the WCAP Army team. So, we had a pretty good go showing of it on our final 2 mile day, but he was a stud. So, yeah, it helps. That's the short answer.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you basically head out to Florida, or sorry, Georgia. You're going to basic training. You don't know if you're going to have where you're going to be living. This is what, late 2019. Do you get home before COVID hits, or how does that all work out for you?
Yeah, that's episode two of my Army career. So I get back basically late 2019, excited to get back into everything I was doing before. Plus now I'm a Army officer, you know, second lieutenant, butter bar, as a lot of the military members would chuckle at. Kind of floated some time there. And then, you know, something that you have to do in your initial training is you go to MOS school, or essentially your job training. And so that, funny enough, started January 2020. And that was, and so I'm slated as what you call a medical officer or medical operations officer. So I'm in charge of setting up large scale medical operations, leveraging the skill providers, dental, medical, nurses, essentially leveraging the medical mission and making it logistically possible. That's, like, quote unquote, what my training's for. Graduated just fine March 15th, 2020. And that was the day the DOD ban came down to stop all flights. So anywhere, basically when the whole kind of travel, air travel went crazy, I somehow got back to Nevada, and they were like, hey, we need you to get on orders. This is kind of your wheelhouse. And I was like, kind of looked at the big picture of what the fitness scene was going to look like, kind of had a feeling that a respiratory cold, flu, whatever the hell we thought it was at that time, was probably going to shut down all interpersonal contact, aka gym. So I was like, yep, I'll get on orders.
Yeah. Because you, at the time, you were running a gym, right? I mean, this is what is kind of what your business was. When we first talked, you know, a couple of years back, you had Elevate. And, you know, I think at that time, when was it that you actually decided to, are you still part of Elevate? Did you step out from Elevate? What's the whole story there?
Yeah, no, I'm actually one of the offices right now filming this, John. I'm still affiliated with the company. I just actually, when COVID happened, and then there was a couple of, like, just financial kind of sticking points of what our next step was going to look like based on where I was and things like that, I was advised to essentially, you know, get out of the ownership side. I said I would be kind of a contractor. I'd work in, you know, these capacities. And it's been this wonderful amicable relationship, but it's kind of allowed me to have the latitude to pursue other things, like, you know, a robust military career 2 years in, now 4 years in, and then we'll get into how I got into my sales position. And it's kind of given me a better life balance and whatnot. So essentially kind of got out of the ownership side right around that timeline. Still associated, happy, cheering them on, cheerleader, getting them, you know, businesses, teams, kind of really excited to still help people in that capacity. Just, I didn't want that to be my end all be all, 20 years from now. Right. I wanted to be a little more diversified. So, that's the short answer, I suppose. And then basically talking training, fitness, I just ran. I kind of went back to return to running roots, Once a Runner kind of book. That's a good book if anyone hasn't read that, and kind of got back into like almost a marathon style of training with our buddy Paul Duncan, and he was getting me ready for the Guard Marathon, and pretty much just got into single sport running training just because time efficiency and being on orders and being on my feet, going around all these Vegas hotels trying to set up this COVID business at the time. And you know, we really didn't know what it was at the time in early 2020. So it was kind of a crazy thing on the military front. But I was able to run every day, 8 to 10 a day. I was doing quite well with it, just to make the Army National Guard marathon team, which is a great opportunity for guardsmen to run marathons and races to support health and wellness for the guard. And the nice thing is, guys like me, we can get on orders and get races paid for, which is our equivalent of a pro athlete, right?
Paul and I have had a lot of conversations about him being on the Army National Guard team, and for him it's amazing, right? Because he's seen a good chunk of the country and, you know, some other countries and things like that, and it's all through the guard. So, and it keeps him super fit, right? I mean, he's doing a cool thing right now. It's like this run challenge. I think he just passed 2 years, I think it is, of he's run at least, what is it, 3 miles or 5 miles, or at least 30 minutes every single day for the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, actually. So it all kind of started, the impetus was this weird 30-day challenge. I don't know if it was attributed from like a Dave Goggins thing or thing like that, but it was called the mile a day the calendar challenge. And he started off at 1 mile on April 1st. I remember it was April. And then every day that month, he built up a mile. So if it was, you know, April 2nd, 2 miles, 3, 4, all the way to the end of the month. And what was crazy was that freaking last week where it was, you know, 25 to 31, he ran 25, 26 miles, 27, 28 miles. And I did most of those days with him, or at least portions of it. And that was, I'm going to see what the Strava gods tell me where he's at right now. He's in the mid 700s right now for day streak. Wow. 757 today.
Crazy.
So yeah, we had a whole run party for him set up with like bikes and pizza and all kinds of craziness that final week when he was doing it. And then he started the run challenge, where it's been a good thing for him. He's gotten a lot of people motivated in town to do it. So it's good stuff.
Cool. Well, so when you were, you've been doing all this running, you've gone through the whole COVID thing, which obviously is keeping you fit. What happened after that? I know recently you took a sales job, so you're kind of layering on something else. You've got this, I guess, Elevate on the side, new fatherhood, you've got the military, and then a new sales job comes up. So how does that squeeze into your schedule? What does that look like?
Yeah, so it actually nestled in quite well. And part of the draw of taking the sales position I did is it's for a company called Enola Gay. And history buffs will probably recognize that name. Essentially, it's a pyrotechnics company that we sell consumer to tactical level explosives. Smoke grenades mostly is what we're well known for. But essentially, it was a remote sales position. So during COVID, that was primo, right? Being able to sustain my family from home in a safe environment and kind of leverage military orders at the same time, and kind of a lot of back and forth. But the short answer is, you know, remote positions allow you to have the latitude to train. And the short answer is I picked up a little calf niggle injury, just to running, and just, you know, probably more of just wearing army boots all the time and then running, and just stuff I would tell clients to stay away from. And I just, of course, you know how that is. And kind of ran myself into an issue and basically started swimming again as a just kind of a cross training response, and still found a pretty good pull in the water. Mechanics were still there. I wasn't super far off. And that kind of got me clicking a little bit away of like, man, I think I could still get into this at the level that I was at. You know, I was I was, you know, I was heading to Worlds for the sprint and Olympic distance while my wife was going to Kona. So we had a pretty good go of it before the family stuff of it. So I was like, I definitely could get back there, but it's going to take a year or two. So we're kind of at that year and a half plus mark of where we're at. So just kind of found the love for the water, and really focused on getting better on the water, because the shorter course draft legal style racing is so swimming dependent for your success in the race. That if you don't have a good swim, you're just not even going to be in the race. Like, it's just, you're just a participant at that point.
How do you think your fitness held over when you went from, you know, you were a triathlete, then you stopped, you went military, you're doing a ton of running. How did your overall fitness on the bike and in the pool hang out or stay in there? And do you think from a technique perspective, did you lose anything from a technical perspective on the bike or on the swim?
I would say the most degradation happened in bike power. 100%, you know, FTP dropped probably about, 20 or 30%. I was, you know, being like a 160 guy with a working FTP of 270, 280. I never got over that 300 mark that I was kind of shooting for prior to stopping. So it was decent power for an age grouper. But nothing extraordinary. And then, you know, I remember doing some FTP like workouts and I was like getting crushed almost from a muscular standpoint, at like the 220, 230 range. So pretty good degradation, but I think a lot of it is more like neurological feel, your technical ability to kind of have a good smooth pedal stroke and producing power consistently around the pedal versus just kind of stamping down and pedaling squares and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, you're a strength guy, right? Your strength and conditioning. I mean, that's what you had you here on in the first time. And if anybody that knows Max or has seen Max, he's an extremely strong guy, just naturally. He's got some pretty big tree trunk legs on him. Super strong guy for sure. And one of the things that you've always talked about is lift heavy things. So, you know, there is that strength. And a lot of times we've had people on the podcast where we've talked about, you know, what is your, you know, your like one rep, two rep power, how does that translate over to cycling fitness? And I think I'm assuming you maintain strength, but you did not maintain that cycling in the legs. And do you think, how would you explain that? Where that degradation was there, and did you even maintain your strength in the gym outside of cycling when you were doing all the running, or were you just running?
So one thing by osmosis, you know, the army has adapted to more of a strength conditioning model, which does require lifting weights. So certain deadlift metrics and stuff like that, they look at like a 3 RM or 3 rep max deadlift, and the max is 340. So obviously, depending on your weight is, you know, that's a pretty, for guys kind of our body weighted, that's a pretty good lift. You know, that was something that I was trying to achieve as well. So I was lifting, but, you know, again, you know, any of the cycling aficionados or coaches out there, like, you know, law of imposed demands. I mean, your 5 to 10 second power might be maintained fairly decently well, from a strength training routine, but the, you know, your 3, 5, 10, 20 minute, the stuff you actually are going to use in races, that part of the power curve, that stuff depreciates because just the metabolic system isn't adapted to that type of stimulus, right? It's not efficient in those patterns. And so, you know, again, you know, you get it, you know, the specificity of training is really what I kind of was lacking. You know, I didn't have any lack of top end 5, 10, 20 second power. I mean, I probably can still do 12, 1400 watts on a kicker, which feels dangerous some days, but again, like, who the hell uses that in a freaking triathlon? Even in a draft legal triathlon, you might need to close a little gap, but you're never using that type of power like the guys, this true pure cyclists are. So for me, it was just the degradation of just that time under tension and those type of stimuluses. So the good news is having a bit of a better strength base, and the appropriation of appropriate, you know, good workouts, that power has come back quite quickly. And, you know, I'm going to put it to good use this year, because ironically, regardless of how I may present or look, the cycling of the three disciplines was probably I would go more backwards in that discipline than the other two. And so that's kind of been the linchpin for me to be a high performer. And I think the goal of my coach. I work with John Mason, MP Multisport out of Fort Collins. And we're going to, the short answer is we're going to fix that. So that's kind of where, I'm doing crit races, getting my butt kicked. I did one yesterday and, on Zwift, of course, and just going to make that not a problem anymore. That's the short answer.
Yeah, man. I mean, crit racing, that's going to change a few things for you when you get back into short distance triathlon, that's for sure. As far as your running now that you've been back, you're on the bike more. I mean, you are running a ton. Has it done anything or has it impacted your run in any capacity?
Yeah. So, I mean, natural things are, I do think triathletes for the most part tend to overestimate run fitness in the context of like the paces that they run on easy days and hard days and things like that. The good news is with swim and bike fitness, you do get kind of like that lower basal aerobic zone one, zone two, some efficiency stuff. But I think, I was putting out 60, 70 miles a week on the marathon front. And, we're probably not going to get over 25 anytime soon. So obviously with volume coming down, you're getting just maybe a little less efficient in run patterns, things like that. But I think every run has a true intention now. So I'm doing three or four of each discipline each week now. And those three, four-ish runs always have a pretty specific intention of either zones or the like a mechanical speed where we're doing some strides or hill work. And it's been nice because there's just less, I hate the word junk miles because training, you need to train a lot. You need to train consistently to get better, but it's just a little bit more intentional versus just doing two runs a day, three, 4 days a week, then some big singles. And I feel just better running the 20 to 30 a week, or maybe even 15 to 25 a week. I just feel a little bit like stronger because I'm getting some higher threshold neurological stimulus from my cycling. Swimming really hasn't gotten affected a whole lot, but really ultimately it comes down to the thing that's most important in your training day that happens first. And then everything else is just, you're looking to get second tertiary interest from those workouts.
Yep.
How are you managing the time management piece of this? You've got, obviously fatherhood and being a husband, and then you've got a job, and now you're bringing this back. You have so many different pieces. How are you? I know this is a conversation I have with so many different triathletes about it's a team. And I think for you, Nancy, I've known Nancy I've actually known Nancy longer than I've known you. She's been an amazing athlete most of her life, a trainer. So obviously it's in the family genes. It's in the DNA of the family itself. So how do you manage that from a time management perspective?
Yeah, we do our best to communicate goals of workouts and stuff. And, probably you didn't know this, John, but we got her into full-time massage therapy school.
I did hear that.
Yeah.
That's great news. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of trying to diversify her skill set a little bit. So again, adds another element of time management. So, 3 days a week, she is completely 12, 13 hour school days. So pretty much not available physically on those days, as far as kid logistics, work stuff. So she's kind of out of the picture of that. So the short answer is we're blessed enough to have her sister-in-law, who's basically like one of my best friends, is Kaylin, who lives with us almost like a live-in nanny, but kind of much more than that. But we have one of those, which does help, but essentially is to the time management pieces, workout one has to happen for 7 a.m. for the first kid, for my daughter, who's five, wakes up and has to get roused up for school. And that typically will be, something at home, either run from the house or bike on the bike trainer. And then the day will progress. I'll get on my sales calls between 8 and noon or 8 and 1, depending on how the numbers are looking for the day. I can validate getting a workout in at lunchtime, or I need to wait until after hours, 4 or 5 PM and get the second session in. And then basically once that box is checked, it completely switches to full family mode, very limited phones. And I'm just on deck for all that. So, pretty much on the weekends, I have a little bit more latitude to pretty much do whatever I need to do before noon. But, we're such babies with the cold here in Vegas. I'm pretty much just a trainer a trainer monster now. So I'm just in my garage sweating away in there now. So really that's kind of the setup. So I do basically two sessions a day, one before that, 7 a.m. And then the second one either at the lunch hour or post 4 p.m. And then, you know, because of my strength conditioning background, I kind of know where my issues are and what I need to maintain. And I've been granted, I guess, a little bit of natural strength ability. So I don't really need to put as much time as I would probably coach some of my athletes to have in the gym. So I kind of prioritize certain lifts a week, and I probably get all my lifting done in about 45 to 60 minutes a week, but it's kind of broken up in these like little 10 to 15 minute bites of time where I'm prioritizing one or two lifts and trying to maintain some numbers. And, you know, the thing is, when you have a three discipline sport and strength training and all those other things, like the goal expectation management of that is got to be fairly controlled, and you're really just trying to go for maintenance and maybe some subtle gains in the gym. But that's something that, like, you really do need to prioritize some time for purely the recovery piece to get adaptation in the weight room. So really you're kind of just doing it for activation, almost like a self check-in with yourself in the weight context, and you know, that's really the best you're going to get in a higher training load environment, I think.
Yeah, one of the things I think that I found was interesting when we kind of were talking about this episode, and you brought up the idea of, you know, truly being present with what you're doing, not taking yourself too seriously, and how multitasking dilutes the human experience. Talk a little bit, how about, you know, I know when you were young, and I mean, I was young as well, it was kind of just that go, 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 do as many things as humanly possible. And we both have families now. So tell me what that means to you about how it dilutes the human experience and how you're trying to be present with what you're doing.
Yeah. So I think the ultimate example is, like, I mean, we've all done it, is, you know, you'll be on your phone going through scroll prison and just going through all that. And you look up and like, freaking 15 minutes has gone by, and you're like, where the hell did that 15 minutes go? And you're like, what did you get out of it? You know, like, what, you scrolled through like some posts, and or you might have creeped on someone's Strava that you don't even know, like, you know, just stupid crap like that. And or it has zero effect on your life, like 0%. It's actually, you gave away time, you know, and that was that. So that's kind of what I mean by that, the human experience thing. And so, you know, just really, like, when I am doing a certain task, just to ultimately really try and focus on turning off all those other things. And most important is, you know, when I am done with my checklist or tasks for the day, that, and I'm in front of the little kiddos or my 15-year-old stepson, you know, is to be in front of them, not to be kind of like always checking notifications and things like that. Or even with training, with workouts, right? Like, I really do have to maximize what I'm getting out of each session. So, like, just really just putting down the phone is, like, as crazy as and easy as it sounds, really is a thing that's hurting kind of our generations or generations behind us to a pretty big extent. And you kind of are missing stuff because it's all happening in front of you, not on the screen, you know? So that's just something I've really focused on the last year of being really present with, and like, does this require my attention? Yes or no. And I have to have that conversation myself constantly. So much so, like, kind of funny enough, I have a social media password that goes off after 5 minutes of viewing per day. And I don't know the password. My sister who lives with us, my sister-in-law, she has the passcode. So when my 5 minutes are up, it's up. I have no idea what it is.
That's cool, man. And it sounds like you're also doing a new endurance certification call. Is it the 80-20 endurance certificate? I don't know much about that. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, most viewers that are at least, you know, on the coaching side, or at least, you know, kind of getting on the academic or well-read side, you know, Max Fitzgerald is a big time endurance, you know, kind of at that, like, upper tier level of research and practicality of using research. And he's trained thousands and thousands of people. And just through a couple great relationships, one of my run coaches and colleagues, a gal named Angelina Ramos, she's coaching in Indiana now, but she used to coach at UNLV, just a good friend of mine and colleague. And she's a, you know, high-end mid-distance coach. She's a part of a lot of those coaching boards and you know, female coaching boards and things like that. So she's kind of was priming this 80-20 course as a proctor, and also as someone that's going to be pushing it. And it's kind of a practical application of endurance coaching. And to the best of my knowledge, with the exception of some of the other coaching certs out there, this one has this really great feel to it where you're taught to critical think, you're challenged on the spot in the course itself. And so essentially it's a multi-sport. It's just endurance coaching certification across the board, but it's essentially going under his ideology of 80% of your work needs to be, you know, low aerobic, zone one, zone two, and then everything else, whatever that turn coins out to be is in that 20%. So it's a consistent training model for you to help athletes or yourself be more successful and consistent. Because I think the consistency in checking boxes over time is really what yields results versus winning the day, you know, or winning the week. You got to win the months and years over years to really do that.
Really in line with polarized training to some extent, you know, that, you know, much increased chunk of lower threshold, and then your higher intensity stuff is on the lower end. So yeah, that's pretty cool, man. I'm excited to see how that works out for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing that like a lot of this is coaching certification wide. This is in the fitness world. This is in the triathlon world. And, you know, this is just my small little perspective on it is you get kind of just served a big body of knowledge, and then you get kind of assimilated, and then you get the certification. And then there's no like application to it on the spot that tests competency. So like there's a strength conditioning course called the Certified Strength Conditioning Coach that Mike Boyle puts out, CFSC, and essentially a practical application course to actually pass it. You need to show competency in verbally coaching movements. And if you can't do it, like how are you going to be able to do it with clientele? So this, a lot of our, hopefully the coaching model, coaching certification model, or education piece is more about critically thinking, looking at people where they're at in that time, not just applying, you know, calculators and VT1, VT2 and all this stuff to them, but actually seeing people where they're at and problem solving. That's really what coaches are, is you're almost like I used to coin the term, like we're more like lifestyle accountants more than anything that apply knowledge to their situation. And then the output is really just what they do times what you gave them and however they adapt to it. And that's the result. And that's kind of what I've kind of become a little bit more on the practical side of it with that course is right up my alley as far as critical thinking and helping people solve their life problems is probably more important than sticking them into a formula and having them churn out these outputs, and which is a piece of it, but it's not all of it, you know?
So are you getting more back into the coaching side of things? I know, like you say, you still have an office at Elevate. So what is your role there, and what's going to happen? Is it still sales and then kind of side hustle training? What's going on?
Yeah. You know, I put so much time and education into bachelor's degree, master's degree, further education, you know, coaching certs and things like that. Like, kind of want to just honor that part of the brain that I've kind of honed and helped a lot of people in the strength conditioning and endurance side. So this is kind of I would say a nice mental stimulus for me to stay, you know, sharp and at the pointy end of my knowledge. And, you know, when I get to Florida and with my wife in the Keys, you know, we're thinking about kind of more a much larger impact on the endurance model or endurance kind of coaching scene in Florida. And of course there's a ton of work down there to do and help people, but I think the integration model of, you know, strength conditioning, endurance, and also leveraging my wife's skill set with now massage therapy, we're going to have a nice little service-based model to kind of work off of. And, you know, I like helping people. And while a sales job is something that does pay the bills, doesn't get me excited at the end of the day. You know, I like helping people. So this kind of gives me more than I probably get out of it in terms of income and things like that. So really it's kind of more of a feel good for me at the end of the day. And for me to feel good, I need to feel competent. And these are some of the things that I'm trying to stay relevant and competent, you know? And that's my self-validation, I guess.
And you're headed back to the Keys, right? You were originally born in the Keys. You've been in Las Vegas now for, gosh, probably 20 years or whatever it is. And you recently had an opportunity to head back. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so 20 years, John. You're making me sound old, man. No, we moved here in 2012 after undergrad. So I was 22. Been here for 10-ish years, and then we're heading back. And yeah, so I grew up in the Keys. Kind of was a water bug. Grew up spearfishing. Running was kind of something we just did on land. But basically, grew up spearfishing, going to class, and basically did that for my whole childhood, which is a wonderful, wonderful gift that I'm excited to share with my kids. And being able to go back is just really cool, full circle thing with this, I would say more real world knowledge, and bringing that back to a fairly small town environment. I think we're going to do a lot of good things to help people and make a living, and just excited to have my family be exposed to the water to the extent I was. And there's a lot of gifts there. So I think it definitely shaped who I was. And it was really ironic that I decided to move to the desert to make my stamp, I guess, on the world. Kind of like a weird self-torture thing. but it worked out in a complete delayed gratification sense. So, but I'll be back for military commitments and other things of that nature. So it's not just a full SEA. I'll be more of a commuting sort of thing to here for certain commitments. Because I'll still be maintaining my Nevada Guard commitments for the time being until I promote to a certain rank, and then we'll figure out my next step potentially.
Another thing that is awesome, you're one of the Flow Factor team folks, so you've been on that team, and we're happy to have you there. What are your race plans for the coming year? And talk about how you're going to execute that with a move, all these things on the side, do you have any goals for yourself? Is this something that you want to just go out and have fun with, or do you actually have goals that you're trying to attain?
Yeah. So right now it's more fitness metrics goals I'm chasing right now. There's some, we can get into the deets, I guess, if you like, but my, to be like any good competitor, you kind of look at what the competition's done year over year. You look at their outputs, what they've been able to do, and then you essentially reverse engineer to get yourself to that point that lays out your training plan. And you kind of know upfront where your holes are. So, for me going into the new year is getting my bike power up to 4 watts a kilo. Either, I drop a couple Ks and get powerful, or I get really strong on the bike and keep my same weight. I don't really care how it happens. We just need to get to about a 310, 325 FTP, which would be great for me. We're not super far away based on my crit race yesterday, so I'm excited about that. And then getting my swim, my 10x100, 10 second rest test set in the pool, under like a 108, 107 base, that'll make me fairly competitive at the age group level that I'd like to be at. And then run basically, under 37, 10K will get me a close to 2 hour race on most courses, which is a big goal for mine. I'd like to break 2 hours in a draft legal race, and then get as close as I can to that in a standard race, which will probably be a little slower naturally. So right now it's kind of more fitness metric driven, just to kind of hit certain numbers and what it takes to get there. And we're chipping away at that. And then first race of the year is going to be February in Triton Man, San Diego. I've applied for the draft legal side of it as well. So my goal is, if I get accepted, to race Saturday and Sunday there. So hopefully as many Flow members will be there. That'd be cool. And do that. And then in April is the a race no one will ever see, but it's probably the most competitive amateur race that no one will ever see, is the Armed Forces Triathlon, which will happen at Point Magoo and kind of outside LA there. It's at a Navy, really cool Navy base, but essentially it's all the who's who of the Armed Forces triathletes will come and race there. And that actually will be a qualifier for the World Military Games, which kind of always mirrors the Olympics. And in a location as well. So if you do well enough for that at Point Magoo, you can qualify to race for Team USA on the world military level. So essentially picture the best Army Cats, Navy, Air Force, Space Force, Coast Guard, all of us get together. And it's like a basically cross-country style racing where it's, there's top seven guys or gals racing, and lowest score wins, and then individuals that place well enough, you get invited to be on the big show. So I'd like to do well enough at that. I don't know if this will be my year to get on that team. About four or five of the top guys are people already carrying elite cards that just happen to be in the military. So yeah. It's a pretty stacked field. I mean, it's the last year we had a 3-loop swim and it was like this absolute war to the first buoy. And it was like basically like a UFC match for the first 200 yards. So, I don't think I swam on water for the first 200 yards. I was on top of a body pretty much the whole time getting to the buoy. It was like a, like a heavy metal mosh pit. So that's a totally different, and I enjoy that style of racing. That's kind of more up my alley and my mentality, I suppose. So do well in that. Right after that in April, I will execute the move and then hopefully get involved with the more of the Florida racing scene and then qualify for USAT Nationals. Then do that in August, September. I should know that date. I just don't know when it is. It's one of those 2 months. And then do the Sprint Olympic there. I think I'll kind of have an idea by that point, my world qualification abilities if I can qualify. So that will be the next goal, is to get a world slot and then try and go to do that. And then, hit as many of the Sprint Olympics as I can that work with my life schedule. And then if I talk Paul into letting me on the marathon team, I might throw a marathon together at some point to get on that train. Cause the guard marathon team is, it's a great outlet for us as guardsmen to get on orders, race and represent our state, and go that route. So that might be in the cards as well, but most importantly is have fun with the sport, kind of get it integrated into my life again and my family's life, get my wife racing again to that level, and which she'll be excited to get back into like probably the 70.3 scene. She's been doing Xterras. So really a good life goal for me would be is if we can get back to that national level competitor and we're both happy and healthy and our kids are good, that's good enough for me at that point. If anything more happens than that, I'm not going to, and I start feeling to get to that level, I have to take away from the bank account of crap I have to do. I won't do it. It's more important for me to have that life balance and, can't break the home front just because I want to train, go from 10 to 12 hours a week to more,
Yeah, no, and I love that, man. It's one of those things that, like I said, I've been around this space for such a long time and you hear so many people that are trying to find that balance. And it's a really cool journey that you've had to go. That's why I wanted to get you on the show, right? Because you were 100% strength and conditioning, triathlete. And then all of a sudden you've kind of made your way into this really cool balance of what sounds like a great home life, family life, athletic life, work life. When you head out to the Keys now, are you actually looking for people to coach? Are you doing anything trying to build a community out there, small team? How can people learn about you, and what's the best way for people to engage with you if they're interested?
Yeah, so my to a smaller extent at this point, my wife and I maintain a website and our email. Our company's name is Jones Endurance Project, a little knockoff of the Nike Oregon Project, but through our last name in the front. So I cannot believe that search engine that wasn't taken on Google, but it wasn't. So essentially my wife and I do coaching at different levels. My wife is an absolute rock star at kind of the newbie triathlete that's getting into the sport, like swim competency, safety, getting through an open water swim, dialed in on bike. We have a lot of resources to help get people figured out, appropriate wheels, flow wheels, and, bike fits, and get them kind of all dialed in. And then I kind of almost get the handoff when they're kind of ready to kind of apply more of a stimulus. And it's not more about it's about executing the training, and it's a little bit less about the lifestyle conversations with everything else they have going on. I still do that to a point, but I tend to like the more the style person, or we tend to find each other is the better way, is where, they have a fairly specific goal, it's timeline, and we're able to reverse engineer what their goals are to what their actual life is going to give us. And then we can have those adult conversations to get them there. And then leveraging our strength background, I think we can, I don't want to say be riskier with the training, but I think I know what we can get away with a little bit quicker on the front end based on keeping them a little healthier on the gym side, where maybe traditional endurance coaches only may not give them certain types of workouts because they don't know what the true interest or, result will be, because it might be a little riskier with that. So there are some things that we can do there where I can kind of create some, I would say, catch-all safety nets in terms of keeping them healthier, so I can do some things on the earlier end with athletes to kind of boost their training on the front end. Yeah, so you can email me at maxwell@jonesenduranceproject.com, and we can go from there. Use Training Peaks. Now I'm getting more educated with 80/20, so kind of a nice fun body of applying all these different endurance models to helping people do whatever they want to do and be happy.
Max, I love it, man. Great story. Great to have you back on here. You've always been a big part of the tri-scene athletic scene in Las Vegas. So appreciate that. It's going to be sad to see you go, but I know you'll be back, and I know you're going to do great things out in the Keys. So thanks for coming on, man. And we'll stay in touch.
Thanks, John, for your time, man.
Thanks for listening to Faster. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Leave a review or teach a friend what you learned today. For more great episodes on getting faster, subscribe to this podcast. While you're on your next ride, be kind to one another and ride safe.